Let's just get started. So I'm Peggy Mee, and I am happy today to invite Jody to speak to us on behalf of the Green Team and the PPACH. And as you all know, Jody Sanger is our beloved grounds and maintenance manager. And we're so happy that she's joining us today to tell us about all the wonderful best practices objectives that she's implemented here on our campus. She's moving us forward in a respectful, healthy, people and planet friendly way, and we're grateful for that. So Jody has been at Panorama since 2011, and she has experience in landscape design, construction management, and has served as a supervisor on the grounds crew for several years before she was promoted to grounds manager here in 2012. She oversees all aspects of grounds maintenance, including roofing and gutter cleaning, pressure washing, hardscape, trash removal, pest control, campus improvement projects, snow and ice removal, PPACH maintenance such as mowing, a collection of the trimmings and providing mulch there, as well as helping with many projects that go on there with building and things that they have coming up. So she's keeping this place in our community and grounds and gardens so healthy and absolutely beautiful. I don't know how she does it. So from using the new green equipment and tools, she's limiting use of toxic herbicides for weed control and finding non-toxic solutions for weed prevention, et cetera, we'll hear more about all of that today. She's definitely a friend of Mother Earth, and we all know that what's good for our Mother Earth is also what's good for us and all of Earth's inhabitants. She's our friend for sure. So I hope many of you were able to go on the sustainability tour that was done recently by the Green Team. And then if you did, you were able to hear firsthand from her and her crew about some of the practices and new equipment that is being used here, thanks to her looking into innovative ways that are really great for us and the environment. So thank you for sharing all of that information with us, Jody. It was so informative, and it was really great to hear all the ways that you're moving Panorama forward. Such a positive person you are, and you're helping our planet in such a great way. So thank you. And so I introduce and welcome you, Jody, and hold your questions for later, and let's get started.
Anyhow, as I was saying, I'm still happy to share with you what our grounds department is all about. And I know that some of what I'll talk about today is repetitive for those of you who did the sustainability tours, but I still intend to reiterate what some of the things we're doing are. And so please forgive me if some of it seems a little bit redundant. Just for those of you who may be new residents coming to Panorama, just want to share with you briefly what our department is made up of. We have roughly 32 people on the ground staff, including myself. And of those 32 people, we have 18 area gardeners, because we've divided campus up into 18 areas with some sub areas also. And so ideally, we want a landscape gardener to be responsible for roughly 4 to 5 acres on their own, even though we do massive teamwork. We also have 3 full-time irrigation technicians. We have 2 people designated for renovation landscaping primarily. We have a couple of people designated for pressure washing. We have 1 pesticide technician, 1 refuse truck driver, 1 mechanic, and 1 administrative assistant. And with that, the 32 of us, on any given day, there's normally only 26 to 28, but our goal is to take care of the 140 plus acres on campus, which includes between 36 to 37 acres of turf. And we're dealing with roughly 800 households and 1,200 residents. Our current goals in the grounds department are, and have been for many, many years since I've been here, to keep the entire campus looking good all year long through all seasons. Our other goal is to stay attentive to residents' views and their privacy. We also, this is one of our newer goals, We want to follow sustainable practices as much as possible. And we want to be able to, in doing so, maintain access for grounds, for facilities maintenance staff, and also security for all of us to be able to do our work. And the other super important current goal and ongoing that I have is to keep my grounds staff motivated, inspired, and happy. Because I truly believe when you have happy employees, they do better work and just spread good energy, good karma throughout campus.
Thank you.
Some of the challenges that we have in the grounds department, one of the biggest challenges is that we're dealing with a current design here at Panorama that is 55 plus years old. So as you can see, looking around, we have massive, massive overgrown mature trees that we're constantly taking issues to mitigate health issues, fungal issues, security, visibility issues, and so on. We also have a lot of aging specimens of shrubs, trees, and even ground covers. So there's an endless amount of work that needs to be done just to maintain such a mature design and landscape. Our other challenge is to keep our maintenance as efficient and do as much low maintenance as we can, but still provide all of our residents and staff on campus a seasonal, colorful, and interesting landscape. Another challenge we face are renovations projects. There are times when renovations is constructing new units and so on, and feels the need to remove mature trees and other mature shrub growth. So that is a continual challenge, and we work and collaborate with renovations to try to do the least amount of removals of trees in particular as possible. Another challenge we face currently and ongoing are resident expectations. We know that everyone has their individual preferences. Many residents want ownership of the landscape. And so we are continually challenged with how to reach that happy medium where our residents are happy and content, but we're able to do our job as we see fit and that we can maintain a cohesive looking landscape throughout campus. Another challenge we have are residents' opinions when they want to know what, why, and how we're doing the things we do in grounds. So communication is something we talk about all the time in this department. As a matter of fact, we have all staff meetings every single morning at 7:30 sharp. And I just continue to reiterate what our protocols are, what our goals are, what our challenges are, what we're trying to accomplish moving forward. And we talk about these things each and every morning over and over and over, because my goal is to have not only our grounds department all walking and talking the same language, I want us all to be on the same page, but I also want to share that with staff and residents so that we all understand what, why, and how we do what we do in the grounds department. So the last kind of big challenge we have, but it's been somewhat mitigated over the past couple of years, is maintaining our staff. We struggled immensely a couple years ago because of COVID. We were running with a staff not of 32, but on an average of 12 to 15 people a day. So consequently, we fell behind on a few things, namely pruning and moss control on the roofs and those types of things. But the other challenge in maintaining our staff is just keeping our staff educated on best practices, which again is why we have daily meetings and continue to reiterate what our goals are. So with all of that being said, what I'd like to talk about today is just some of the best practices we have, including our plantings, how we feel about bees, weeds, our weed control, mulch, our lawn care, and our irrigation system. And so I'll kind of just go along in that order. And if anyone has any questions about anything I'm discussing, then please feel free to save those for the end, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. Okay. So one of our main goals now in practicing sustainable practices is anytime we need to do plant removals, we want to replace those plants with as many native specimens as we can. And the reason why is because those native plants require less maintenance. They're adapted to our soils and climate. They rarely need to be watered as opposed to many other foreign shrubs, trees, and plants. Also, native plants are better at preventing erosion than other specimens. And they provide better absorption of water. We want plants that will thrive in all of the different types of soil we have on campus. We have at least 5 different soil types, and we have issues with compaction all over the place. From years gone by of construction, building, mowing, equipment, this, that, and the other. We just have a lot of compaction issues, but many native plants are well suited for compacted soil and will actually help improve the soil and make absorption much better. The other main reason that is dear to my heart is that the more native plant, the more habitat we provide for our local birds and wildlife, including even little insects and our bee populations, our earthworms, our beetles, our roly-poly bugs. I mean, rabbits, squirrels, chipmunks, all of it. Those wildlife that live in this area would prefer that we have native plantings all around. The other thing that native plants do is they help to replace noxious weeds with non-invasive plants. So many of our invasive weeds, and not just weeds, but other perennials and other shrub growth, many of them are not native to this area and therefore are very invasive. So if we can remove those and then in turn replace them with native plants, we'll be a lot better off. The other reason we want native plants is not just habitat for our local birds and other wildlife, but we want to make areas where bees can forage and other wildlife can forage, and that we have enough plantings out there for all of our pollinators to stay healthy. And the other thing is that the native plants generally will provide seasonal interest that's suited for our ecosystem here. And another reason we want them is because native plants are more likely to tolerate native pests. So that's something we don't want to introduce shrubs, plants, ground cover, trees, and so on from other parts of the world that may also bring non-native pests. And so it's just, we're way better off all in all to just do as many native plantings as we can, because we don't want to have to deal with so many fungicides, insecticides, and so on to try to treat pests that are interfering with our vegetation. So I just want you to know I have several pages of native plants that we are currently using here on campus, and we are continuing to introduce even more. And that goes for shrubs, trees, perennials, bulbs, ground covers, vines, and grasses. And you may have noticed over the past couple of years that we have been introducing a whole different variety of vegetation on campus. And one thing we're doing in the grounds department is we have a couple of field trips planned, actually more than a couple, but we have 2 different locations. I'm going to take one group at a time, but we'll be going up to the Woodbrook Native Plant Nursery in Gig Harbor, which many of you may be familiar with when Peggy Mee, I believe, introduced them at one of your recent green team functions. Anyhow, we have a few plants from them, but we want to go up there. I want my crew to feel hands-on and learn hands-on and get educated on what native plants do best in our area. And then the other thing we're doing, many of you may be familiar with Brent Chapman. He's the grounds maintenance manager for the Olympia Capitol grounds. And he has recently introduced a ginormous pollinator garden at the Capitol campus. And he's all about following environmentally friendly practices for maintenance. So we have a field trip planned there also next week. And I'm going to break our crew down into groups of 6 to 8 people and then go up there because, again, I want our crew to take full ownership of this movement to try to be more sustainable. And I want them to be educated about native plants and right plant, right place. Okay, and I would be happy to list any of these plants in any one of the categories on the Green Team's website if you'd like. I know I've sent a few over in the past, but I've expanded the list of what we're doing. So just talk for a couple minutes about bees. We all, I'm sure, can agree, we all know it's a fact, bee populations have plummeted over the past few years. Some of the likely causes are bee diseases and parasites like the Varroa mite. I've actually read many, many articles and been to seminars talking about the Varroa mite, which is not native. And that's causing a lot of plummeting bees nests around the country, not just here in the United States. But the other thing that has caused bees to disappear are pesticides and herbicides and insecticides. So that's something I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But it's one of the reasons why we choose to lessen our use of both herbicides and insecticides. The other thing that has caused bees to plummet is the loss of habitat and nutritious plants to forage on. And that again is why we're leaning towards planting more and more native plants. And I just want you to know one of our main goals in the grounds department is to implement healthy plant communities so that we can prevent the reestablishment of noxious weeds while still providing habitat for our wildlife and forage for our pollinators. We feel that if we can do plant species in conjunction with weed control that will work hand in hand, then we're going to be gaining on our bee populations. And as a matter of fact, bees also actually do like non-native plants as well. They actually tend to like heathers, lavender, so on. Also herbs like dill and chives, and even vegetable flowers that we get from cucumber and tomato plants. So it's not that we have to be an entirely native planted landscape, but I still feel that the more we do, the better. But we all know that in keeping in line with our goals of having low maintenance, efficient landscapes, that we do need to have other plants besides just native, because we have so many ornamental gardens, even though we're this ginormous arboretum and our goal is to keep it natural and primarily do selective pruning and planting rather than formal. We still feel that it's okay that we have some plants here that aren't necessarily native. There are many things here that have thrived and have become acclimated over the years. And so I'm okay with that as long as it's conducive to our overall goal of providing a healthy, better ecosystem for our wildlife. So let me move on and talk a little bit about weeds. Just as a matter of fact, most of the plants we call weeds are actually not native to this area. So another good reason to try to eradicate those weeds. Since our campus has over 140 acres to maintain, in the past, conventional practices have included using a fair amount of herbicides to control our weeds. And because we have a department just 30 plus in size, there have been way more weeds than a crew of this size could actually hand pull and maintain all of the other maintenance practices. So conventionally, a lot of herbicides have been used. What we're doing now is leaning towards more sustainable practices where we can actually mitigate the use of herbicides that are traditionally synthetic and contain glyphosate and like 2,4-D. So we are still using some herbicides, but I want people to know that we only use things that have our Environmental Protection Agency approval on all inert ingredients, including our adjuvants that we use, like soaps and vegetable oils that are necessary so that even though we're diluting our herbicides with water, we need to have adjuvants like soap and oils to help the herbicides stick to the leaflet and be absorbed better. I also want people to know that we have a number of licensed applicators in the grounds department, and we follow all of the rules. Our best practices are following exactly what's on the label, adhering to what the EPA, even the USDA and the FDA have cited as rules and limitations for whatever herbicide we're using. We also pay attention always to temperature. We don't want to be using herbicides out there when it's too hot or too cold. They won't be effective. We pay attention to wind conditions because we don't want drift and overspray. And we pay attention to the time of year that we're, or not to the time of year, we pay attention to where the weeds are at and their maturity. So ideally, we always want to only spray weeds before they've gone to bloom and definitely before they've gone to seed. So timing is very important for when we use these herbicides. And in maintaining our goal of helping the bees out, we always want to make sure that we're only spraying chemical herbicides early in the morning or in the evening when the bees are back nesting. And we just don't ever want to be out there spraying when the bees are present. We train all of our licensed applicators on best practices, including always just trying to spot treat the weed and not have any overspray on any other plants, and to be very aware of their surroundings so that if there are a lot of bees and or other insect activity, because they too are pollinators, we don't want to be spraying during those times. I want to mention that herbicides are designed to work on plants, not animals or humans. When they're mixed with water, they're practically non-toxic to humans, fish, and animals, according to the EPA, the USDA, and the FDA. I just want to state that, and it gets reiterated to myself and other licensed applicators each year when we take classes. Each and every one of us take several credits of classes each year through seminars put on by Wazoo and other places. But I just want you to know that is what the legal authorities say out there. I personally am still opposed to it, to the use of herbicides. I just feel that we're caught between a rock and a hard spot here at Panorama because our campus is so large and we just don't have enough people to take care of everything all of the time in a timely manner. Anyhow, the chemical synthetic herbicides, the other reason why we still feel a need to use them at times, especially with invasive, like I said, non-native weeds, is because the chemical herbicides generally work systemically in the plant. And so many of our weeds are structured with underground storage structures like rhizomes, tubers, or bulbs. And so spot treating on the top surface of the plant with our non-chemical applications isn't as effective, especially on non-native weeds like thistle, bindweed, and quackgrass. And it's also more effective on broadleaf weeds like dandelions and plantain. So you may have noticed that once a year, annually, we'll have a company like Woolbert's come in and spray our turf for broadleaf. Timing is also very important with Woolbert's when they're spraying. We don't want them out spraying if it's at a certain time when the bees are foraging out there. So we try to get it done like late winter, very, very early spring before all the critters are out there foraging, and not just bees, but little rabbits and things that like to go out and eat the clover and so on and so forth. I want to also mention that although our goal is to promote sustainable practices, that there is a benefit sometimes to using herbicides that are synthetic that will take care of our invasive weeds. Because if we can control and eradicate those invasive weeds, then we will allow more space for native weeds and plants, which is what our wildlife prefers to forage on and nest on. It isn't just foraging, it's about nesting and so on. So then that's enough about the chemical herbicides. Let me talk to you about natural herbicides and what we've been leaning towards in the grounds department. We want to use natural herbicides because obviously they're less toxic, making them much more safe. We also know that we can still use natural herbicides for weed control in our lawns and our garden beds, producing natural herbicides. So I'm really happy to see that. What we're doing in grounds, as far as natural herbicides, are some alternatives I spoke about. One of them a couple of years ago, we bought a Ninja machine, which actually is considered Satu steam. It's saturated water steam, saturated and elevated to a temperature that is so high, it will actually destroy the plant cells upon impact. So we have used that. A bit on campus. We found out that this machine was very cumbersome. We have since done some engineering and have got it hooked up to a trailer with wheels so that we can pull it behind one of our little Toro Workmans or our carryall and get to more places with it. So we find that it is effective at killing weeds with nothing but water, high temperature steamed water. But the problem is this machine runs on diesel and takes a fair amount of oil and maintenance. So I'm not super, super pleased with it as far as using it to eradicate weeds all through campus. But we are finding it very useful at eradicating moss around hardscape surfaces. We're using it to disinfect our dumpsters and our refuse truck. We're using it for moss on gutters and siding in places. And we will still use it periodically for weed control, especially going down roadways where the fumes from the diesel and so on won't be so bothersome to people as if we were had the machine right up near their house using it. So as you all know, we have a lot of issues around our gutters, cracks in sidewalks, driveways, so on and so forth. So we do still intend to use our machine in those areas. But the other thing, and one that I'm just super excited about in our department, is we've got all of our landscape grounds people trained and educated on the benefits of using vinegar with a little bit of oil and diluted with water. Now, the vinegar that we're using is actually 30% more acetic, has 30% more acetic acid than just household vinegar. You can find that your household vinegar may be able to treat little areas of weeds and or moss, but what we're using is even much more acetic than household vinegar. And so at this point in time, we have all landscape gardeners carrying spray bottles of this vinegar in their vehicles, and we're encouraging them to pay attention to their areas and use vinegar every chance they can to eradicate weeds when they're very small before they mature and go to flower and or seed. So the difference between some of the chemical herbicides and our natural herbicides like vinegar is that the vinegar is a contact herbicide. So it's only going to kill the green part of the plant. It won't actually go down and eradicate the root system, which may be made up of rhizomes, tubers, and or bulbs. But the best we can do is to at least get out there and get all those weeds while they're tiny before they mature and send their roots, whether it's rhizomes, tubers, bulbs. We don't want them to send those down deep. As you all probably know, dandelions, you can go pull a dandelion out, and if you leave one little piece of root, or buttercups and many other plants, thistle, that plant knows you're trying to kill it, and it's going to send out even more root structure and become even a larger plant. So our goal is, once we've cleaned up an area, we want to go back right away and do some type of spray treatment. That's not the only thing we do, though, to eradicate, and I'll talk about that. We have over two dozen places where we've already removed a significant amount of sod and are then replacing it with shade gardens and or paths. And one of the reasons we're removing the sod is not only to be more ecologically friendly, reduce noise pollution and so on, but we just feel, why do we keep trying to replace sod in areas where the sod isn't doing well? With our mature canopy of trees we have surrounding and covering panorama, there are many places where sod just doesn't do well, but you'll see the mowers flying through there anyway to get to other patches of grass that is growing. So in all of those areas, and there are many of them, like I said, we've touched on at least a couple dozen so far, but we have many, many more on the books. We intend to remove sod. And we're finding that a lot of residents are very supportive of what we're doing, because instead of looking at just patches of dirt and mud and weeds, which weeds love that bare soil to grow on, we're actually replacing those areas with shade gardens, native plants, wood chip paths, and so on, and just making it much more beautiful for residents to look at, which, if you'll recall in the very beginning, I said one of our goals is to keep residents happy, and we're very concerned about what residents look at out their windows and as they drive up to their homes and so on. So if the green team would like, I can send out a list of all of the places that we have already removed sod and replaced with shade gardens and wood chip paths, and all of the ones that are on my list. I have at least a dozen more on the list that are in the planning right now. Something that I would like to look into and really see it come to fruition in various places on campus are eco lawns. I don't know how many of you are familiar with eco lawns, but eco lawns thrive in the Pacific Northwest. Basically, what they are is a collection of plants that work together for a lush, consistent patch of green requiring far less H2O than our traditional fescue ryegrass patches of lawn and sod. They require far less mowing and require little or no fertilizer. They may also include low-growing herbs and small little flowers like a yarrow, ajuga, violas, crabgrass, English daisy, alyssum, and veronica. The key ingredients in producing these eco lawns are drought-tolerant fescue grasses, dwarf ryegrass, and low-growing clover. The most important piece of this puzzle is the low-growing clover. I don't know how many of you know this, I'm sure some do, but clover has the ability to literally take nitrogen out of the air and turn it into fertilizer. How does it do this? The nitrogen the clover doesn't readily need is stored away in bead-like nodules on its roots. So when the clover loses leaf mass, the roots of the clover die off to compensate. because plants, and this is true of all plants, they're always trying to create a balance between leaf and root mass. So if we plant clover in with our grass, and it needs to be the low growing type of clover, and then we mow it periodically, maybe only a quarter to a third as much as we would mow regular traditional lawn, then we're going to be fertilizing the lawn ourselves with the nitrogen, which is what all grasses love more than anything. And we're going to be fertilizing it with the nitrogen that the clover has produced. Because if we mow the clover, the nitrogen will be released from its roots, which die, and that will continually fertilize the grass. And in doing so, our objective would be to mow the lawn at a still a high height so that there would still be little flowers and clover blossoms and so on for the bees to forage on. So the idea is that we aren't mowing it way low. We're still keeping it at a lush green height, but mowing far, far less than we traditionally would do. So this is a trend, these eco lawns, it's a trend that is taking over nationwide and even worldwide, actually. There's one little downside to these eco lawns, and that is that if we plant all of this clover and other low growing herbs and or flowers and so on, these things attract honeybees. But that's not a huge, huge issue. And the reason is that honeybees are essentially harmless unless we're trying to invade their nest. Well, they are not nesting in these patches of clover and herbs and flowers and so on. So it's really not that big of a deal. In fact, I've read where some people notice a lot of honeybees in their eco lawn and they walk around, but the bees just flitter off. It's, you know, they just take off. They're not problematic like bald-faced hornets and some of the other insects that we have. And even bumblebees aren't that dangerous, but it's primarily the honeybees that are attracted to these ecotypes of lawns. But we haven't done anything like this yet on campus, other than where I've extended the buffer zone down at Chambers Lake, but I would sure like to introduce some of these lawns in places around campus, wherever we can, and at least on borders around various green belts and common bed areas. Another thing that I'll just mention briefly that I would like to pursue at Panorama that is a trend that is growing around the world, literally. The idea began in Japan, and that is about tiny forests. So tiny forests are very beneficial in helping us with stormwater absorption, with weed suppression, carbon dioxide absorption, cleaning the air, and again, providing wildlife for the birds and the animals and the insects. And these tiny forests, when done correctly, grow quickly, 10 times faster, say, than just our DNR and other places going out there and planting forests with tree seedlings everywhere. The idea is to plant native species that are more resilient and can tolerate the climate change that we're undergoing. And so the idea is to plant layers from shrubs to a canopy of trees. And I know we have areas on campus here that would accept that type of tiny forest. And in fact, the one rain garden type area and native planting that we're doing right now is down at the end of Chambers Lake Lane at 2639, abutting the fence line to the Chehalis Western Trail. And I intend to do some of these tiny forest practices in our planting down there. It's an area that I know is used by many residents on Chambers Lake Lane. It's a gathering area, but it's always just been a big, expansive lawn, nothing too exciting about it. And it gets very, very wet and soggy, and we end up with all kinds of lawnmower tracks and issues, especially early in the spring and so on. And so we decided to incorporate one of our rain garden type plantings down there. And I really feel it's a perfect location to test this tiny forest philosophy. I'll talk a little bit about irrigation for those of you who aren't super familiar with what we do with our irrigation. I mentioned earlier, we have three full-time irrigation technicians here. And those technicians take care of, we have a very sophisticated irrigation system here. We have 61 clocks, and each one of those clocks is capable of housing 12 to 64 zones. So as you can imagine, there are literally thousands of things to take a look at when it comes to irrigation. Our irrigation crew each year, primarily in winter and very, very early spring, they go around and they look for issues and repair and fix as they go. They're looking for leaks in our valves and connections where we may be losing water. They're looking for broken sprinklers and drippers. They're looking for incorrect aim of the sprinklers so that we're not wasting water. They're looking for coverage because our goal is to have head-to-head coverage always when it comes to our turf in particular, meaning we don't want overspray. We want heads to bump up to each other as they're spraying and not be overspraying unnecessarily. And they look for misting where there may be water pressure issues with the irrigation. And again, if there are issues and the sprinklers are misting or fogging, then they're not being as productive as we want them to be. We want to eliminate misting and fogging so that we have even coverage, not uneven coverage. We also have our irrigation crew consistently looking for our dripper spacing, our little emitters off of the irrigation lines. Our goal is to promote micro irrigation, meaning that we want the sprinklers to be irrigating the soil and near the root basis of the plants. We don't want overspraying on top of our shrubs and ground covers and so on. We also have our irrigation crew monitor daily, and I'm always in there with them discussing this, but we're always looking to the scheduling and the timing of our systems. For instance, because we've done rotational mowing and because we are just so monitoring daily and weekly our weather and our lawn situation out there, we have reduced irrigating our turf this year by at least 50%. And so we're feeling very good about that because we want to collaborate with the city of Lacey and their efforts to reduce water usage, because Lacey essentially has three aquifers. They have seven reservoirs and they have about 20 well systems. There are times when we have hot summers and times when people are using irrigation the most that some of those wells can run dry. The aquifers can become, they can start to be, not the aquifers, but the groundwater as a result of the aquifers can actually become depleted. So there's a real concerted effort being made by the city of Lacey to collaborate with other big users of water like Panorama and other companies and industries around to lessen their use of water. So another primary reason why we're trying to be more sustainable. Let's see. And I just want to mention also the city of Lacey actually began their wellhead protection program in 1995 to ensure that land uses aren't contaminating groundwater. And their testing results have been available and are regulated by the EPA as well. So it's really good to know that we are in line with far less levels than are even acceptable by the EPA as far as contaminants in our water like arsenic, fluoride, lead, nitrate, radium, coliform bacteria, chlorine, and others. So we're in very good shape as far as water-wise in Lacey, which includes Panorama. Okay, one last thing I'll talk about before we open it up for questions is I just wanted to mention, for those of you who don't know, another thing we're doing to work towards sustainability is incorporating more and more green equipment in this department. So right now our arsenal includes blowers, line trimmers, vacuums, mulchers, a 21-inch push mower, pressure washers, chainsaws, Sawzall, and our club car carryall, which is more or less a modified golf cart. The reason why we're leaning toward doing more and more, using more and more green equipment, is because of pollution, including noise pollution, air pollution from using gas and oil, and because we know that noise pollution and extreme heavy blowing and so on is not conducive for a friendly, copacetic wildlife environment. We're also finding that with the green equipment, there is far less maintenance required. And like I said, the green equipment doesn't use gas and oil. So another benefit to try and save on resources. And so again, it's one of these things like doing leaf mulch, rotational mowing, and so on, hand pulling weeds instead of spraying and so on. It's just something that I'm continually working with our crew on, educating them on why and how we want to do best practices. So with that, I just want to end by saying that I feel very fortunate to be working here at Panorama. I truly love my grounds crew. I feel that we have more passionate, dedicated landscape gardeners in our crew now than we ever have in the past 15 years. I've only been here a little over 12, but I just know for a fact that the crew we hire now are more educated and more passionate about what we're doing than ever before. And my challenge is just to train some of them who have come from other venues and aren't so knowledgeable about what we can do to help our ecosystem and what we can do to do the right thing, which I feel is all of our responsibility here at Panorama.
Thanks a lot, Jody, for telling us everything
about what you're doing. Like I said in the beginning, thank you all too for standing behind me on some of what my missions are here in the grounds department.
Well, I think a lot of this was recorded. Some of it went out, but if some of you missed parts, that you could probably get parts of it so you can go back and try to rehear some things that you missed. So anyway, thank you so much. We all just adore you. You're just one of the best things that ever happened to Panorama. And
yes,
we appreciate you. You're our honeybee and earth mother.
You're too kind, but thank you.
Thank you so much, everybody, for coming.
Thank you, Jody.
Okay, you're welcome.